The Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Yasya.
Of him.
Padam.
The lotus feet.
Sumangalam.
All auspicious.
Vimoktasangaha.
Persons who are completely disinfected.
Of material conditions.
Muniyaha.
Great sages.
Susadavaha.
Those who are highly elevated in spiritual consciousness.
Churanti.
Practice.
Alokavatam.
The vows of Brahmacharya.
Vanaprastha or sannyas.
Avranam.
Without any fault.
Vane.
In the forest.
Bhuta atma
bhutaha.
Those who are equal to all living entities.
Suridaha.
Those who are friends to everyone.
Saha,
that same Supreme Personality of Godhead.
May.
Gatahi.
Destination.
Translation. Renunciance. What's a renunciant? Does any of the children know?
Like when you give up something.
Yeah, people who give up everything in this world. And great sages who see all living entities equally, who are friendly to everyone, and who flawlessly practice in the vows of the forest, the vows of Brahmacharya, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas, desire to see the all auspicious lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. May that same Supreme Personality of Godhead be my destination. So, purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki
Jai.
This verse describes the qualifications for devotees or persons highly elevated in spiritual consciousness. Devotees are always equal to everyone. There goes the internet again. Is someone using the internet downstairs? Or? Because it actually causes it to drop off. Anyway, so people are depending on this. All right, here we go. A reliable internet connection. Devotees are always equal to everyone, seeing no distinction between lower and higher classes. Pandita Samadarshanaha. They look upon everyone as spirit soul who is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Thus they are competent to search for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Understanding that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the friend of everyone, Suridam Sarvabhutanam, they act as friends of everyone on behalf of the Supreme Lord, making no distinction between one nation and another, or one community and another. They preach Krishna consciousness, the teachings of Bhagavad Gita everywhere. Thus they are competent to see the lotus feet of the Lord. Such preachers in Krishna consciousness are called Paramahansas. As indicated by the word Vimuktasangha, they have nothing to do with material conditions. One must take shelter of such a devotee in order to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, Tadrikshavo Yashapadam Sumangalam Vimuktasangha Muniya Susadavaha Charanchaloka Vratama Vanam Vane Vatatma Bhuta Suvida Same Gatahi. So, let's see. Omagada Timidanda Shah Dananjana Shalakaya Shakshur Miditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So there's different varieties of creepiness. What's a creepiness? Does anyone know what the word creepiness means? Miserly person. And not just miserly in terms of money.
but miserly in terms of consciousness. So there's different varieties. One, the worst variety is the person who just thinks of himself. He's called a psychopath. That means he doesn't care how he hurts anybody else, you know, what he does to anyone else, what destruction he makes. It doesn't care. His own satisfaction is the most important thing. And prisons are filled with psychopaths. They have no empathy or feelings for other people. You ever meet someone like that? Actually, it's a lower stage of consciousness. Right? Even little babies are like that. Yeah, I'm not saying the babies are psychopaths, but they're just thinking about themselves. And, you know, they're hungry or they feel uncomfortable. That's why they cry. I mean, for example, if I feel hungry or uncomfortable, I don't start crying in the middle of class. You know, sometimes we have a pain, we go, "Wah!" So anyway, so that's the ultimate selfishness. You just think of yourself, you're not concerned with anyone else. So then you can expand it a little bit, expanded selfishness, the things related to your body. And what are things related to your body? That means your family members, right? Okay, so that's extended selfishness. It's a little bit better. You know, you like your family members. Like when I was young, my mother would tell me, "We're the best family." And I said, "Why?" She couldn't explain why. And I said, "Everybody's thinking like that too." So then you expand it a little more, and then you have your, I guess, your village or something like that. You expand it a little bit more, and you have your state, like New South Wales. And then, well, in America, sometimes we have distinction between people in different states. Especially in the South, the people hate the people from the North. That's why there was a war between the South and the North. What's that? Yeah, the same thing. So, and then even in the South, they call people come from the North, they call them Yankees. And they would have a sign sometimes, "Yankees go home." And it's interesting, there's a subdivision right near where I live, where a lot of people who don't come from the South, because this North Carolina is in the South, even though it says North Carolina, and it's called Cary, C-A-R-Y is the name of the city, and people get taken as an acronym for Containment Area for Relocated Yankees.
Oh my God!
That's not actually what it came from, but you know the Southerners take it like that. So then you extend your. You see, this consciousness is really there. And then you extend your bodily consciousness a little bit more, and then you got nationality. You know, we're Australians or Americans, and then you all have a flag, isn't it?
Mm.
Like I was in Fiji, and one time I was attending a ceremony where it was a graduation ceremony, and the PM was there, and everyone had to rise and sing the national anthem. Oh, Fiji, my Fiji, I love you, Fiji. And of course, even in Fiji, there's a breakup between the different races, too. So then, then you also have, like, racism, where people think that their race is best. And even in India, where people, you know, many people come from India. Of course, many of you have backgrounds coming from India. There's discrimination between different races or places in India. Like you have, there's sometimes the people from Gujarat, they look down upon the others, isn't it? I was listening to a conversation some devotees from Gujarat were having, and they were calling the rest of the devotees, "Those Indians!" and actually, you know, so even devotees are sometimes succumb, or aspiring devotees succumb to that particular consciousness, isn't it?
"Those Indians."
Or, you know, sometimes I can understand enough Hindi or even Gujarati to understand, you know, "Those whiteys," you know, whatever. Anyway,
so people don't understand that I'm listening to what they say. Prabhupada gave the example when he was in school. Sometimes the students would criticize the English teachers who were from England. And then they would say it in Bengali, thinking that nobody would understand. And then the teacher spoke back in perfect Bengali. And they go, uh-oh.
We're in trouble.
We're in trouble now. So that's like there's racism. And you see this all over the place. I mean, in America, it used to be very prominent, where there even have to be special bathrooms for people of a different color, different seats in the bus, different places they weren't allowed to go into, different golf clubs they couldn't join, exclusive golf clubs. And so that's extended bodily consciousness. And then you extend the selfishness even more. And then you get into something called speciesism. Speciesism means we're human beings. We have a right to exploit and eat any other creature we want. Because we're human beings. And they don't have souls. Many so-called Christians will talk like that, isn't it? They said, well, it says in the Bible that we shall have dominion over all the creatures of the earth. Mankind shall have dominion. And they take dominion as meaning they can do anything they want with any of these creatures. And you ask them, how can you eat an animal? Doesn't have feelings? No, it's like a vacuum cleaner. it's a machine. That's basically it. It's a machine. And it has no feelings. Of course, anybody who has ever had a dog knows that dogs have feelings, right? I mean, somehow or other in the West, they treat the dogs like God, and the cows they treat as hellishly. In the Indian culture, if you have to eat some animal, then you just eat a lower creature, like a chicken. I mean, even in Fiji, generally, the people from India, they're not eating cows. They're not eating dogs either. I've never seen that. But they have goats and things like that. It's like there was one gentleman who became a devotee who used to hang a goat right next. Just because he didn't like the devotees chanting Hare Krishna in the temple that was right next to his house, he'd hang it like goat skin or something like this. Just see you, Hare Krishnas. Ha ha! Goat. And later on, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, he became a great devotee. That shows how Lord Chaitanya's mercy is always there. Yeah, he's the father of one of the devotees in Roma. Because it's like Jagai Madai, they were imitating the chanting of Hare Krishna. They were outside of Lord Chaitanya's kirtan, and they were getting drunk. And they were going, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. That's called Namabash. So he was, all day long, this gentleman was thinking, those Krishnas, they're making too much noise. Those Krishnas, I don't like those Hare Krishnas. So all day long, he was chanting. It's like the story of, in the Chaitanya Bhagavata, Gadadhar Das, not Gadadhar Pandit, but Gadadhar Das, and he went to the Kazi one time, and he said to the Kazi, chant Hare Krishna. In the middle of the night, he woke up the Kazi, and this poor, and everybody was afraid of this Kazi. He was a Muslim, he's ready to kill anybody. He just said, wake up! He said, chant Hare Krishna. And the Kazi was just rubbing his eyes, huh? What's happening? He said, Gadadhar, tomorrow I will chant Hare Krishna. And Gadadhar said, right now you're chanting Hare Krishna. Why wait till tomorrow? You already chanted. So we're talking about extended bodily consciousness, which is speciesism. But Krishna consciousness means Yastu Sarvani Bhutani Atmane Vanapashati. You see all living entities as a part and parcel of Krishna, your brothers and sisters. Even there was one Christian saint, Saint Francis, who recognized that.
Saint Francis of Assisi.
Saint Francis of Assisi.
I did a project in
Assisi. Oh, really?
Of animals.
Yes, he's the patron saint of animals. He considered the animals to be his brothers and sisters. Yes. And he wrote in his rules for his monastery
you know, there's monks who follow, there are Franciscan monks, the people should be vegetarians, yet the monks don't follow it. I mean, even St. Benedict, because I visited some Benedictine monks, I used to go and preach to them, and one of them became a devotee. His name is Mukunda. He got initiated too. So one of, even the monks, they have in their rules. I said, let me see the rules that you're supposed to follow. And one of the rules was you should be a vegetarian. And I said, why don't you follow it? Why don't you follow your own rules that were mentioned by the founder Acharya? And they said, well, that rule was written in Italy and it's cold here. We need to eat meat to stay warm. And actually, if you've ever been to Italy, it's cold there.
It's cold up north.
It's cold up north in Italy. Very cold. Sometimes it even snows, and you got the Italian Alps, which actually people go skiing in, so it's not a warm place. So people have so many excuses because of their uncontrolled tongues. But basically, we should see every living entity equally. And even in the Vedic, not the real Vedic, but the Indian tradition, you find so much discrimination based on caste. You know, caste means, you know, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, Chandala, Yavana, you know, outcast, etc., like that, or as they say in India, scheduled caste. That's the word they use. You ever heard that word before in India? Scheduled caste means outcast. Instead of using the term outcast, which is a pejorative term, pejorative means it's a critical term. You know, it really sounds bad. Hey, you're an outcast. Then they use the word scheduled caste, or scheduled, or however they pronounce it. A different pronunciation than me. What?
Scheduled caste.
Scheduled. Scheduled. Yes, scheduled caste. But scheduled is the right English, anyway, at least American English. So there's so much discrimination. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to sort of destroy this particular type of discrimination between the castes. And we see in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, I mean, one pastime is very interesting that completely illustrates this point, is that Lord Chaitanya picked as the Namacharya Haridas Thakur, who didn't even come from any of the castes, he came from a Muslim background. And not only did Lord Chaitanya pick him as the Namacharya, the teacher of the holy names, but Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would personally bring him prasadam every day, because in Jagannath Puri they wouldn't let people who were non-Hindus, so to speak, enter the temple. Even Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami didn't go in the temple because previously they had taken employment in the government of the Nawab Hussein Shah. So Lord Chaitanya would come every day and basically serve his devotee, Haridas Thakur. And not only that, when Haridas Thakur, it's an interesting story, when Haridas Thakur was leaving his body, or getting ready to leave his body, one day Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and said to Haridas Thakur, who was lying on his back, you know, what is the news, Haridas? And Haridas, of course, said that I'm having some spiritual difficulty. Actually, he was very humble like that. Even though he was very old, he couldn't complete, you know, all the rounds, 3 lakhs of rounds a day. That's a lot of rounds. That's almost 192. It's a little less than 192. So he said, my difficulty is spiritual. Well, that's the humility of a devotee. Even though he's unable to complete his rounds, he attributes, because of some external circumstance, he attributes that to lack of spiritual advancement. So Haridas Thakur then asked Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said, I just have one request. I want to leave my body before you do. Because he didn't want to see Lord Chaitanya's final pastimes. And I want to leave my body chanting Sri Krishna Chaitanya. So then Lord Chaitanya said, you know, Krishna is duty-bound, basically, to follow your desire, Haridas Thakur. And so then the next day, or day after, whatever, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu comes, and he allows Haridas Thakur, basically, to hold his lotus feet and look at his lotus eyes as he's chanting Sri Krishna Chaitanya, and he leaves his body in such a condition like that. And not only that, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu takes the body and starts to dance with the body. You know, remember, this is a caste-wise, this is considered like he's an untouchable. I mean, the Veda, the Brahminical culture at that time is that if an untouchable stepped on your shadow, you'd probably beat him up. Or have him beaten up, not by yourself, but you have someone else beat him up. It was unacceptable. Even if you saw the face of an untouchable, you're supposed to run to the Ganges without even taking time to change your clothes and jump in. That's the injunction. Even if you see the face of a non-devotee, untouchable, whatever. And the Brahminical rules were so strict like that. And so Lord Chaitanya was dancing with Haridas Thakur's body. He personally arranged to dig out the earth to bury, or the sand actually in the particular case, to bury Haridas Thakur's body. And he was going to the shopkeepers to beg for boga or prasadam, actually prasadam because they were selling Jagannath prasad, for beg for prasad for Haridas Thakur's ceremony. And he personally served the devotees prasadam during Haridas Thakur's disappearance. And he personally made the devotees eat so much, five times as much as they normally eat, just to honor Haridas Thakur. So you see, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a social revolutionary. And not only Lord Chaitanya, but even Advaitacharya, before Haridas Thakur left this world, Advaitacharya would give Haridas Thakur the Shraddha plate. You know what that is? That means when you... It's not like in Fiji, when someone passes away, they put the things that they like the best, including cigarettes, on the plate. You ever see that?
Yeah,
you know, they're so crazy. They have this pita paksha. And during that time, they take whatever the person liked the best. You know, let's say he was smoking cigarettes. You put it on the plate under a tree. But the reason the poor guy has gone to hell is because he was smoking cigarettes and drinking alcohol or kapha, whatever, isn't it? You know, you're trying to save him from hell, but he's already in hell because he's been smoking cigarettes his whole life, and then you're giving him more cigarettes to smoke. But actually, the ghost doesn't smoke the cigarettes. Don't worry about it. Later on, a dog comes by and eats whatever's on the plate. Isn't it? Is that true? So, but the actual shrad, or you call it shrad, but in Sanskrit it's shraddha ceremony. The actual shraddha ceremony is on the anniversary of the person passing away. You do some puja to the deities, you offer some prasad to the deities, and you offer to the best of the brahmanas. I mean, there's a whole complicated ceremony. In South India, they're quite expert. They actually switch their Brahmin thread from one side of the body to the other. I don't know if any of you have seen this ceremony. It's quite complicated. You're from South India, so you know. They do that, then do that. And the relative of the deceased would do that. And then they've invited some Brahmanas. I mean, I've been invited by some South Indian, like Pukka Brahmanas, to be that Brahmana who would take the Shraddha plate afterwards. And then you feed the Brahmanas. And so Haridas Thakur was chosen by Dvaitacharya to accept that Shraddha plate because he was considered the best of the Brahmanas. It's very interesting, isn't it? So you see this, you know, social equality. And then later on, after Lord Chaitanya's time, you find some of our Acharyas, like Narottama Das Thakur, was born in Kayastha family, you know, it's a business family, but sometimes it's considered a Chudra family. He became such a great Acharya that he was initiating Brahmanas. There's even one story of how there was some Brahmanas who were very upset that he was taking disciples. And so what they wanted to do was to defame him. So they went with their whole group of Brahmanas to argue with him, you know, to show that he knew nothing about Krishna consciousness or nothing about the Vedas. So, Narottama Das Thakur's disciples got wind of this. In other words, they heard that this was going to happen. So they thought they would play a trick on the brahmanas. So they went to the village that was right before where Narottama Das Thakur was, and these very educated Brahmin disciples of Narottama Das Thakur, ones that could speak pure Sanskrit, they set up like a shop, different shops, like a cloth shop or a betel nut, you know the betel nut? So these ritualistic brahmanas on the way to see Narottama Das Thakur stopped at this village to buy their betel, you know, whatever. And the shopkeepers started to speak to them in pure Sanskrit. You know, shopkeepers. You know, you don't ordinarily expect that when you go into a shop in India or anywhere. And so they said, "Where did you learn the Sanskrit?" And they said, "Oh, we're just simple, humble disciples of Narottama Das Thakur." And when they heard that, they said, "Well, I guess we better not argue with Narottama Das Thakur. I guess..." And even the king had a dream that night that he should surrender to Narottama Das Thakur, because they were all working with the king to defame Narottama. And they all became disciples of Narottama Das Thakur. And even... There's a phone ringing. And even later... Oops. And even later... the brahmanas would still criticize Narottama Das Thakur. In one particular instance, he was he wanted to leave this world, so he said to his disciples, "It's time to leave this world." So he climbed up on a funeral pyre. You know, just so he climbed up and said, "All right, I'm going to leave this world." And the brahmanas just started criticizing. Looks, it's so inauspicious. He's climbing on a funeral pyre while he's still alive, and then. Immediately, Krishna reigns at Narottama Das Thakur, manifested a golden Brahman thread on him, like a glowing Brahman thread. And then he came down from the pyre and continued his pastimes for a few days. Eventually, he entered into the Ganges and he told the devotees, "The way I want to leave this world is you give me an abhishek with the Ganges water." And his body dissolved into the Ganges. It became like a milky white substance as they were pouring. It's an amazing pastime, leaving his body. As they were pouring this water, Ganges water, on his head, the body just dissolved into the Ganges and became a milk. They saved some of that milk for the samadhi called Dugdha Samadhi. Dugdha Samadhi. So it's a very interesting story about... And he was considered Shudra. And then you have... then later on you have Gurukishore Das Babaji Maharaj. He was from a Vaishnava family. He was like a cloth dealer or something like that. And then he became the guru of one of the most educated, perhaps the most educated devotee in our discipline, because that's Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was from a high-class Brahminical family. So you find all these instances, yet people still go around and they criticize Prabhupada for initiating, let's say, Westerners with sannyas. And they say that even you get some of these Goswamis who come in. There's actually one of the descent, not real Goswami, but he's a descendant of one of the Goswami families in Vrindavan. And he comes to the Western world and he preaches and he says, these Western people, or people not born in non-Brahminical families, they can never be gurus. And then he convinces people to take reinitiation from him, rather than be part of Prabhupada's movements. One, you know, I'm not going to mention who it is. I know who it is. He has a name is Goswami. That's a traditional name for many of the people who take care of the temples in India. They're not actually Swamis or Goswamis. I mean, just like one time, one lady came to the temple. I said, "What's your name?" Oh, she said, "My name is Karuna Goswami." First, I didn't understand. I didn't know any of this stuff. And I thought, wow, she's a renunciate. I said, "Where's your danda?" So, I didn't say that. But then I understood it. It's like a traditional name sometimes for people in these temples. So anyway, so we need to see all living entities equally and not discriminate according to caste, creed, or race. This is the Krishna conscious belief. And so, how do we achieve that? We see that they're all connected with Krishna. Krishna is the Father, Aham Bija Pradapita. You got one Father, and the Father loves all of his children equally. Even Krishna loves the ant, the cockroach, the snake, even the brown snake that can kill you, he loves equally. as much as he loves you. Krishna doesn't, Krishna's not partial. Krishna says, Samaham sarva bhuteshu name dvesho stinabrihat. That's a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. I'm equal to everyone. No one is especially my enemy. No one is especially my friend. So in other words, we all have equal opportunity to become Krishna conscious too. It's not that, you know, that someone is Krishna's favorite. You know, someone says to me, you know, I say, well, you should chant Hare Krishna, or you should be more detached from this world. And they say, that's easy for you to say, because you got Krishna's mercy. I say, you all have Krishna's mercy. It's a question of taking it. Krishna doesn't discriminate. Krishna doesn't say people from India are more worthy of mercy than people from America. Everybody is equally. Samaham, sarva bhuteshu. That's a statement in the Gita. Sama means equal poise. Just like Prabhupada quotes here, samadarshi. That's in, not in reference to Krishna, of course. That's in reference to the Gita verse, vidyavinaya sampane brahmani gavi hasini ashuni cheva swapake cha pandita samadarshana. The learned and gentle sage sees with equal vision, you know, a Brahmin, an outcast, etc., like that. So we have to develop that vision and understand that the great devotees have that vision. So, any questions or comments? Or arguments, or problems, or issues? Yeah.
In one of the earlier pastimes that you were talking about, you were talking about the untouchables and how if someone saw even the face of an untouchable, they should
go to the Ganges.
And you said that was actually an injunction.
Not a Vedic injunction.
A caste one.
Actually, Lord Chaitanya said once he's the face of a non-devotee. That's actually the injunction. But of course, we can't follow that because we're going out, you know, like if you're working a job, or even me, you know, I'm in a car and look around, there's a face of a non-devotee. So all day long, I would have to carry a spray bottle of Ganges water. Every second. Imagine in the workplace, you know, you're going to work and you're sitting with your co-workers there and go, I mean, it reminds me of the time that I had one of my friends who had this whole ritual that every time he yawned, he had to snap his fingers. You know, anyway, you know the whole thing, like yawn, like it's from Hanuman, you know, some story about Hanuman that's not even bona fide. So he was out somewhere and he was yawning and people were thinking he was hungry. You know, you see someone doing it, it's weird. Isn't it weird to see that? You know, so therefore we don't go spraying each other with water, but we chant Hare Krishna. Om apavachar pavitrava sarva vashtam katopiva yaksmaret pundrikaksham savaya avyantara shuchi shri vishnu shri vishnu shri vishnu. What does that mean? Whether you're in a purified or unpurified condition, if you remember the lotus-eyed Lord, pundrikaksham, then you can actually you're actually redeemed, purified. You could Vyantara Shuchi Sri Vishnu. Then you can actually approach Krishna consciousness. You can be purified all the time. So the whole point is Yatsmaret Pundarikaksham, to always remember Vishnu wherever you are. If you're at work, you remember what you're doing, why you're doing it, and you chant the holy names. I remember Prabhupada was always chanting the holy names. Even when he was in an interview, I remember one time we were in an interview with Prabhupada, on television interview, and Prabhupada was, the man was asking him questions, and Prabhupada, his lips were moving imperceptibly, like Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare. And then you remain purified. So that's the secret.
So the origin of that injunction to jump in the river is not Vedic, it's just...
Well, it's one of Lord Chaitanya's instructions. It's not Vedic, it's a Brahminical ritual, but one of Lord Chaitanya's instructions is that, you know, if you see the face of a non-devotee, but obviously you can't follow that in the modern world. But no, it's completely, it was dreamt up by the Brahmanas for their own pecuniary purposes, that means financial purposes. So they could, you know, they want to think of themselves as better than everyone else. It's pride, false pride. There's a story in the Jiva Dharma where these Brahmanas came to visit these great devotees, the Babaji's, And at the same time, the Babaji's were having a discussion, a philosophical discussion with the Qazi. You know, and this Qazi was a descendant of the Chan Qazi who was, let's say, liberated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So they were talking, and the Qazi was saying, I've accepted Lord Chaitanya as my life and soul. And so the Brahmanas, or not the Brahmanas, but the devotees were very happy to be talking to this Qazi. And the Brahmanas got really upset, really angry. How could the devotees, or these Hindus, so to speak, they didn't say devotees, be talking to this mulacha? Yuck! And so they thought, we got to show that these devotees are stupid now. So they called for all the most intelligent Brahmanas in the village. We're going to go and defeat these devotees. And just like show them that they don't know anything about Vedic culture. Okay, so they had this whole plan to defeat the devotees. At the same time, one of the devotees, his name was Vaishnava Das. He had previously been a Mayavadi sannyasi who had studied the Vedanta for like 20 years. And he knew all the Vedas. So all these Brahmins came. And then the devotees said, all right, we appoint Vaishnava Das to talk to him. So Vaishnava Das basically, you know, destroyed all their arguments, and the Brahmanas left the assembly chanting, Nitai Gaur. You know, so a Vaishnava is not without philosophy, is not stupid. You know, Vaishnava has philosophy. You have to understand philosophy to be a devotee anyway. At least some Bandha Gyan and Abhideya Gyan, Garujana Gyan. So, yeah. So there's all this discrimination. In India, you find so much caste discrimination, racism. I mean, racism in India, even amongst the Hindus, I mean, you look at all these different Bollywood movies, and the people are whiter than me in the Bollywood movies, isn't it? I mean, I wouldn't even qualify to act in a Bollywood movie. They'd have to tell me to get some skin whitener first. Which is the most popular drug thing sold in the drugstores in India, isn't it? You see it advertised everywhere. I mean, even in America, before you know all this racism was gotten rid of, you see in the black magazines and everything, they were advertising skin whitener and hair straightener. Those are the two most popular things, you know, hair straightener. Because everyone wanted, and sometimes in America you see people, you know, Afro-Americans, with blonde hair. And in India you see people with red hair sometimes. Especially when they get gray hair, they put, what is that called?
Henna.
Henna. Yeah, they put henna in their hair. You see, I said, you got it. Even in Fiji, one of my disciples one time is getting gray hair. And one day he comes to the temple with red hair. I said, what is that? Isn't it? Red hair. And the Japanese, oh man, that's even worse with the Japanese. That you go in an airplane, there's a Japanese, and they have blonde hair, red hair, and no Japanese, like, genetically would ever have any other color hair. Blue eyes. You know, they put all these different contact lenses on. You know, blue, you know, there's a Japanese, you know, in the airplane I see that all the time. And so there's so much of this racism in India, everywhere, actually. So we have to understand these bodies are just tridatake. They're just bags of bile, mucus, and air. And who cares what covers it? You know, like, let's see, if you have a fancy bag to carry around excrement, or, you know, a white bag or a black bag to carry around bile, mucus, and air, who cares? It's what's inside that's important. You know, of course, the souls, it's not that you are bile, mucus, and air, but the soul is inside. That's the important thing. So that's what we're concerned with. We see the soul and the super soul in these people. So Krishna consciousness, we actually have a philosophy to get rid of racism. Nobody else has a philosophy. They just say racism is bad. But we actually have a philosophical basis or foundation for it. Because we're all equal. We're all spirit souls. Okay, any other questions or comments? Yeah.
I just had a question about that in the Shraddha ceremony. When ancestors go to hell or something, if you perform that ceremony, the idea is to liberate conditions. So you were saying that in Fiji, people offer cigarettes and things. So if they do that, do they increase the bad karma?
No, because the person doesn't actually take the cigarettes. I mean, it's not that the person comes and takes it. The whole idea is you're supposed to offer prasad and do devotional service. Like, people all the time ask me, so-and-so passed away, what can I do for him? And the answer is you do some devotional service. You sponsor a feast for the person in his honor. You sponsor kirtan, or you have a kirtan in your house. So we're not, the mundane Shraddha ceremony only enables someone to go to Pitri Loka. You know what Pitri Loka is? That's the place of the Pitri. It's like a vacation spot. And only for a limited amount of time. Let's say you're doing... There's a whole... Anyway, I'm not going to tell this story. But there's a story in the Mahabharata about that. But let's say you're doing the mundane Shraddha ceremony for your grandfather who passed away. So he goes to Pitri Loka. It's like you're paying the bill for him to stay at a hotel. What's a hotel spot here? I mean, what's a vacation area in Australia?
Central Coast.
Let's say, oh no, yeah. So Central Coast, you know, he's staying in the Central Coast in a hotel, you know, beautiful hotel, and he's retired because he can't make any more money, like a dead person's retired. You can't accumulate any more money when you're, you know, after you die, unless you take another body, of course. Any karma. So he can't get any more good karma. And so you pay the bill for him. That's the whole idea. Just like if your grandfather's retired and he's not on pension or something like that, and you want to treat him to a vacation. So you give him your credit card, and you're paying the bill for him. But what happens when you stop paying the bill for him? Did they let him stay in the hotel, the Central Coast? They say, you're out, buddy. I mean, they were treating him so nicely before, but the people who were treating him so nicely before treat him like a dog when he doesn't have the money. That's material love, isn't it? If you pay, people treat you so nicely. If you go into it, I used to buy cars for the temple, which I don't do anymore, because now we get cars donated. So when you go to a car dealer, they treat you so nicely. They remember your name. They practically fan you with a peacock fan when you go in there. Oh, Mr. Swami, how's the Swami family doing? And the little Swamis. And I said, no, I'm a sannyasi. That's what Swami means. And then, you know, they sit me down. Even if you go to Loy Bazaar and they know that you're, you know, a sannyasi or something like that, they roll out the red carpet. You know what that means? They give you, would you like a drink? Let's send someone out for whatever you want. What do you want, Maharaj? And then they show you the photo album of all the other sannyasis who shop there. You ever seen that? In Lloyd Bazaar, you know, the temple presidents who shop there, you know, he shops here. You know what Lloyd Bazaar is? Lloyd Bazaar is the main shopping place in Vrindavan, where you spend your whole time in Vrindavan and you never get a chance to see any of the holy places. That's Lloyd Bazaar. Anyway, it's not important. It's not important. So they're nice to you there. So in that same thing in Pitri Loka, they're very nice to you until you're descending. Your putra stops paying the bills. And then you get kicked out. Yes, that's right.
That's what the hell.
And then when you stop paying, then they just go back to wherever they were supposed to go back to. But if you pay the bill spiritually, if you offer to Krishna, and you do the Shraddha ceremony properly, then you're relieving them from karma. Because as we know, so many generations of devotees, forward, backwards, horizontally, you know, vertically, become liberated just by being a devotee, just because you're a devotee. In other words, you liberate your family. You're doing the best thing for your family by your being a devotee. But if you do the mundane Shraddha ceremony, you're just helping them for some time. Does everybody understand that?
So after they're kicked out of Pitrila,
the whatever karma they have to suffer or enjoy after that point.
They could even become an animal after that?
Yes. It's temporary. Karma is temporary. Shinai punya marchi lokam vishanti. You can go to the heavenly planets, but then after that, when your good karma runs out, you come back down. Marchi lokam vishanti. That's what Krishna says in the Gita. There's no permanent situation in the material world. You go up, you go down. However, if you go to Krishna Loka, punarjanma naiti mameti sojourna, you never take birth again in the material world. Anyway, I think we have to end here. The natives are getting restless. So today we have an interesting program. We're having a temple fundraising tonight.
Temple fundraising.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a question over here. Do you have to do a pin for devotees and all that?
You should. I mean, you should do it in a Krishna conscious way, yeah.
I mean, like, pin means like those seven...
Not the whole ritual. No, you do Vaishnava stuff.
Just havan, that's what you mean, right?
You don't necessarily have to do havan. What I would do is you worship the deities in their name. You do something... I mean, the holy name is much more powerful than any havan.
No, you don't have to do that.
You can do that. I mean, in South, the ones I've been to, the Shraddha ceremonies, they do that. But if you simply chant Hare Krishna, you cannot even compare that to billions and billions. If you can, even if you do compare it to billions and billions of other ceremonies, like the Shraddha ceremony, like Ashwamedha, Gomedha, you're a demon. Even if you compare it, you're a demon. The chanting of Hare Krishna is so powerful. And we need to have faith in Krishna's names like that. You can do these other things. Advaitacharya did it. The idea is that if you're in a culture where that's the accepted thing, if you don't do it, people will criticize. People will think that we devotees have no culture. You know, we're just like mlechas. So yes, we should do it. We should do it. But what really liberates or helps the person is the chanting of Hare Krishna, is bhakti.
I think that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did for Haridas Thakur. They chanted and did
the feast. Yeah, for Haridas Thakur, all they did was chant and have the feast. But Advaitacharya, being a householder in a Brahminical society, did the whole process. So the people would respect our movement. So we have to act in a way so our movement is respected. And particularly, you know, if you're in Fiji, yes, you should do all the rituals. But if you're an Aussie, it's not necessary. You know, it's not necessary. But Fiji, yes. Do a whole show. I mean, one of our devotees, you probably know Atma Tattwa from many years ago. He was expert in doing these shows. And people would be very impressed. I mean, he was like a real showman. And everyone thought, wow, I should become a devotee.
He's around in South India, I think.
Yes, in South India. I mean, I saw him last time I was in Sri Rangam. And he was there. He had a big beard and everything like that. Yeah, he's practicing Krishna consciousness. He's a devotee, but, you know, sometimes devotees, when they have a background of, like, South India, like that, they sort of get back into their background to a certain extent. But they still practice Krishna consciousness. Yeah, he's a very nice devotee. I mean, I really like him.
He's awesome. He's, like, lectures and...
Very interesting, yeah. He has stories about Hanuman and Ram and...
All those hidden stories.
Yeah, hidden stories. He's very, you know, very nice devotee. Okay, so it's time to end because we have a a big day. We have the temple fundraising, friend-raising. And that'll be this evening. You're all invited. If you want to help. So anyway, that's for the new temple, the Western Sydney Temple. Western Sydney Dham. They have to give it a name first. Like Aloka Dham or some Dham. D-H-A-M. Okay, all glorious to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Jai. Tomorrow's Gadadhar Pandit Goswami's appearance day. So that'll be the class tomorrow.